I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. Thank you to our patrons, including Luke and Nick Gassman, Richard Taylor, who are supporting us directly and keeping us in supply of microphone cables and Vaseline. You can join them and get access to our weekly sister show, Extra Message, by going to patreon.com/UK Tech. We're joined this week in studio by CNET.com senior editor Andrew Hoyle, who's with me in person at my home studio. And I have to say, actually, you smell a little bit like a cross between coffee and disappointment.
Oh yes, hello, I am here. Thank you for me being here.
That's all right. You moved to Scotland recently.
I did, yes. It was only 2 weeks ago, and now I'm back in London for several weeks.
Have you questioned your life choices?
I've questioned my life choices in returning to London. I have not questioned my move to Scotland one iota.
Okay, how much is an iota?
It's several, isn't it?
Well, speaking of things that are measured in severals, we're going to start talking about Mobile World Congress, and that is because another company has decided not to attend the gigantic technology show over concerns of the global outbreak of the coronavirus. This week we saw Nvidia pull out. We've seen LG and Ericsson announce that they're not going to be attending. It's the world's largest mobile trade show. We've been going for many years. Nvidia said in a blog post that, quote, given public health risks around the coronavirus, ensuring the safety of our colleagues, partners, and customers is our highest concern. We regret not attending, but believe this is the right decision. Now, CNET wrote that LG and Ericsson had already said they won't be attending MWC this year, which is due to start on the 24th of February in Spain, Barcelona specifically. ZTE has also already called off its press conference. LG said it's withdrawing because most health experts advised against, and this is a quote, needlessly exposing hundreds of employees to international travel. Needlessly. So, traveling and exhibiting at MWC serves no need. I mean, that surely calls into question the whole necessity of a show like MWC anyway.
I mean, I think needlessly is accurate in that, is MWC a life or death situation? Is it something that really has to be done? Because we've been asking ourselves this. I've certainly been questioning, like, yes, it's a big deal. It's where a lot of important news happens and stuff. But is it critical to attend to the extent that you need to put yourself, your staff, your employees at risk of getting ill? Because it's a huge international show. There's lots of people from areas that have been hit. There's a lot of companies coming in from mainland China. And you put all those people together, thousands and thousands of people, inside basically a big box for a week. Like, that is not a good thing to be doing when the virus is still spreading.
Yeah, if somebody commissioned it as some kind of reality TV experiment where you put 100,000 people in a box and one of them's got an incredibly contagious and potentially deadly disease and leave them there for a week, it would never, ever get commissioned.
No, obviously not. But yeah, we've got lots of companies pulling out. We haven't heard from some of the bigger brands. I mean, Samsung is going to be there. It's doing its bigger Unpacked launch event outside of MWC beforehand, so it's kind of already getting its news out of the way early. And the GSMA itself has pretty much just been echoing the words of the WHO in that, you know, they're taking appropriate steps, but there's a lot of question in that, is an appropriate step cancelling it altogether this year?
Well, let's pick up our opinion shovels and dig into this a little bit more. As you say, the GSMA has been vocal on this. It has advised people, as one of the measures to protect themselves, to enforce a self-quarantine period in Barcelona. Now, the problem there is that the incubation period for the coronavirus is about 2 weeks, which means if you wanted to arrive there and give yourself an appropriate quarantine, you need to be there as of today, Sunday, the 9th, 8th that we're recording this? The 9th. You'd need to basically be there today in order to be there for the start of the show and know that you weren't going to be a risk to other people. That may be very good news for hotels, but it's extremely bad news for people's financial directors who need to sign off extended leave. Another measure that's been suggested is to have a no handshake policy. Maybe people can use the Japanese tradition of bowing. You know, that's an excellent way of expressing pleasure and thanks without risking, well, death. One of the questions that gets asked around newsrooms, I think, is if the companies aren't attending, then is news not happening? And the irony, I think, is always that the lack of news coming out of something the size of MWC is in itself news.
Yes.
You can never not have news, because even an absence of news is news in itself.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if, you know, companies want to launch their product, they want to do that, then they can still do that. They don't need to be at MWC. You know, there is still press releases that can go out over email. They can still hold separate events by using their different PR teams around the world. So it's not like it's their one opportunity to do this stuff. But certainly for smaller brands, that networking opportunities face-to-face with people is incredibly valuable. So this is going to hit, I think this is going to hit the industry fairly hard. And obviously the amount of money that's already been invested in it by companies, by news outlets, by the GSMA itself that puts it on, I think it's the numbers that are going to come out of this afterwards is going to be very interesting to hear. The very cynical part of me did think the other day that, well, actually, for some of these brands, and I won't go into any specific ones, but I know that some basically don't have anything to show off at the show. They don't really have anything much to talk about. And some of those are the ones that have been very vocal in saying, oh, no, we aren't putting our people at risk, which is almost like quite a clever PR play in making it seem like they're a very, very caring employer and also getting out of spending a lot of money and being there without anything really to show off.
What's possible that we could see is a lot more stuff being done over video conference, being streamed. It's very easy to show off a product via live stream. Companies do it all the time. And you could absolutely do a launch virtually over a stream from the comfort of your own quarantine facility without having to travel and risk this. But I think there's always that knock-on effect that you then potentially lack the differentiated press coverage you get by having all the world media in one place. And secondly, I think it more existentially raises the question of whether a show like this is even necessary. And that could have repercussions for the likes of CES and IFA and some of the other tech shows that we cover every year.
Well, a lot of these shows have been sort of slowly receding in their importance in the industry. You know, shows like IFA just don't have the same impact they once did. And that's largely because companies like Samsung, which at one point were a real hero of the show, they used to launch their Note line at IFA. They instead hold their own events. And that means that there's a big news gap in not having that Samsung event at that show. And that's been the case with MWC, with Samsung doing its S10 or S9 or S8 or the S11, whatever it's going to be. They don't do their launch at MWC, and so the fallback position could be that these companies just send out press releases and pictures of their products, which is fine, but news still gets out there. But for most tech outlets, really don't like covering news just from a press release. What we want to be able to do is see the product, get hands-on, be able to talk from a first-hand perspective about what's exciting about this product, why it's good, what it feels like to actually hold and to use. And obviously you can't do that when all you're being sent is a press is a press image, possibly even done from a render. It also makes it very easy for companies to hide behind a lot of, you know, babble in a press release of the product that simply isn't ready yet, and you would get to see that it isn't ready in person.
Are you a gigantic conference center expecting 100,000 people inside you in a matter of days? Do let us know what corporate decisions have been made about yourself to hello@uktechshow.com. More likely, you're the person in charge of organizing it on behalf of the convention. Your opinions are arguably more valued and arguably far easier to put in an email. hello@uktechshow.com. Dyson's plans for a wearable air purifier that's also headphones have been published by the UK's Patent Office. All credit, I have to say, for unearthing this goes to my colleague, actually, Giles Turner at Bloomberg, who scored this story for us this week. And he wrote that the product, which is developed by Dyson engineers, houses a filter within the headphones with a form of nozzle providing filtered air to the user. The patent notes that, quote, air pollution is an increasing problem and a variety of air pollutants have been known to have harmful effects on human health. Now, the timing of this publication during the coronavirus outbreak is almost certainly just a coincidence, and patents frequently never actually become, actual products. And I went through the patent this week, and it's fairly lengthy technical description with a fine tooth comb in order to write a single paragraph in our story about how things are meant to function in this device. And the product, to me, it looks like a fairly standard pair of over-the-ear headphones, except there's a protrusion that looks a little bit like an oversized chin strap that you'd expect on a riding helmet or a bicycle helmet, except it's more solid. And there are two motors, one in each of the two ear cups, which pulls in about 1.5 liters of air every second. That then fires down each side of this little chin strap type thing that's got holes in it, and the holes point towards the mouth. And that makes for about 2 liters of filtered air just over being fired towards your lips every second, pushing dirty city air out of the way and replacing it with nice, breathable, filtered air. So the question here, Andy, I suppose, is why not just make a breathable air purifier mask? I mean, Dyson is known for making air-based products, whether it's a vacuum or a hand dryer or a fan or something like that. But it doesn't have a legacy with headphone technology. The product itself looks incredibly bizarre. Luke in our chat room listening live right now said it looks like a dystopian movie trope, which is absolutely accurate. And I think that, you know, Dyson could very easily market a breathable air mask arguably far better than it could market a pair of headphones.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I first heard about this, when you were reading it out just then, I assumed that maybe it would just look like a pair of headphones. So the idea being is that you wouldn't necessarily look like you've got a big air filter mask on. But now, having looked at the diagram, at the picture that Ian's posted, yeah, there's no way you're hiding the fact that you're wearing some massive piece of face wear. I don't really see what the point is, because you're right, they could very easily do a regular face mask, as a lot of people wear in cities, and have that being powered and have the filtration systems in there. Perhaps though it would be simply too heavy to hang only off the front of your face, and therefore would need to be braced by your dome, and therefore you would need to have a headband on. If you're going to make a headband, then may as well turn it into a pair of headphones so that it doesn't get in the way of your actual headphones.
A lot of the discussion around this has centered on it being ideal for cyclists and people who are regularly doing heavy breathing inside a city environment.
In amongst the traffic as well.
Exactly, in amongst the traffic. But I didn't need to repeat what you just said. You said it perfectly adequately. Apologies. However,
just edit one of them out.
I'll just leave them in. This little exchange is valuable. The downside to having headphones on a cycle is that what life you may save by not breathing in pollutants, you may essentially make pointless by getting hit by a car because you cannot hear the car.
Yeah, a lot of cyclists I do see wearing headphones, and some of them might be little earbuds where they can still hear the things, or they might be open back if wearing cans, but yeah, I mean, I've never tried cycling with headphones, but certainly if I was in a major city, I'd want to make sure that I'm using every sense I can to monitor traffic around me.
Well, as you know, I take my electric scooter around the city every single day.
You do. And
look refined as an individual, I think. I mean, you've seen me on the scooter.
Yes, I think the words I used was gigantic wanker.
Yes, well, I chose to ignore that in favour of expediency on my commute. I would never wear a pair of these, because I feel, and this is coming from the perspective of somebody who is very aware that he's standing on an electric scooter going through the city of London every morning wearing a riding helmet, I would look like quite an idiot. But also, I would just not want to wear the headphones because I can't hear anything around me. Yeah. It defeats the object.
Also, as Mike's has put in the comments, if it's for cyclists, then you don't get any head. There's no room for head protection if you're wearing big headphones like that. So
now that's a question. Could Dyson have made this better by making a helmet with a built-in breathing system? Because a helmet would provide the balance required, that at least that you've hypothesized is required. It would provide a very clear marketable product for a cyclist or other road user. And as you said, it wouldn't come with the downside of why is Dyson making a pair of headphones?
Well, it's quite possible that the tech that they've got in there, maybe it's possible that it's maybe like a modular system and you could even take part of it off, and you could even maybe have the filter system could go inside motorcycle helmets. So it would just be able to retrofit inside existing helmets, or you could maybe there'd be attachments for helmets in the way that there are a lot of helmets now, particularly snowboarding helmets that I use, that have got inserts for you to be able to put in different headphones inside. So rather than the helmet selling headphones that can't be removed and therefore can't be upgraded, there's simply a space where your headphones would go.
Where do you snowboard mostly?
France, Switzerland, Italy.
Any particular pistes? I have a question.
You've got your way of speaking that you've got a pun lined up.
I mean, I've always got puns. Okay. That's not why I'm asking. Arosa.
Chamonix would be one. Arosa in Switzerland, I've not been to for a while. Avoriaz is very good.
The reason I ask is that you generally don't have traffic coming at you from 90 degrees when
not
you're
traffic,
up.
But other snowboarders, skiers, and if you have a high-speed collision with someone who's maybe shouting on your right or whatever to try and get your attention, then it's very easy to die or be severely injured. There are many cases of people having really bad spinal injuries because of accidents, because you're traveling at a point of 50 miles an hour downhill. If someone goes smacking into you because you didn't hear them,
is that as fast as you go?
Oh, easily. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised you don't go faster than that.
Oh, right. No. No. I mean, well, I'm sure pros would and downhill skiers would, but I think I've not hit 50 miles an hour on a board. I think I did 62 kilometers an hour.
Oh, okay.
But trust me, when you're on a plank of wood careering down a mountainside, that's fast.
Yeah.
That's really fast,
I imagine. But also, I suppose in a place like Arosa, and actually I've just noticed Richard in the live chat has mentioned this point as well, you generally don't need an air purifier. That's some of the best air
in the
world. It's like a lungs party.
No, I was just referencing that in that, like, the helmets you can buy for those are in a way modular, in that you can add that technology inside, in the same way Dyson could do this for, as I say, motorcycle helmets. As we know, inner cities are full of moped riders for delivery, Uber Eats, whatever. They'd be able to have that technology inside their existing helmets. And it may even be a case that you could attach it to cycle helmets as well.
A few questions that are unanswered about this product, and we should remind everybody that this is a patent. This is not an early leak of an actual product design. Is that there is built-in noise cancelling on this, and I think that there are questions to be raised about whether that is purely to cancel out the noise of two motors that are within close proximity to your ears and the speaker system of the headphones. In the patent, it does suggest that the noise cancellation is both for ambient sound around you, as a normal pair of headphones would use noise cancelling for, as well as to cancel out the rumble of the motors themselves. But a bigger question that I have over this is how the thing's going to be powered, because in the patent, there's no description of any power source, neither battery nor cable. There is reference to Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, so it's clear that there is an intention for this to be used as a wireless audio system, but as to whether that you then need to carry a separate battery pack, or whether the battery is intended to be built in and just isn't described in the patent.
I assume the latter,
but if you think about it, like, powering a pair of headphones with noise cancelling is already quite power consuming.
Yeah.
Generally, that gets powered by batteries in a set of headphones and not from you know your phone or your tablet or computer or something. There's not enough draw potential there. But on this, it could well be that the audio is sent wirelessly, but the power for the air filtration system is an additional unspecified cable and a separate battery.
Possibly. I mean, I don't imagine that that would take a significant amount of power, even like powering two small fans. Presumably, the actual filter system is passive in using filter.
The filter products. System is, but the motors.
Yeah, but two tiny little fans.
1200 RPM.
Yes, but that's Dyson. That's what they do. They've got very, very efficient motors, particularly on such a small scale. Wouldn't imagine would take a lot of power. Like I'd have thought, even on a reasonable size battery inside their headset, you'd still be able to get a good 4 or 5 hours of use alongside that. You'd probably still have to charge it every day. We're going quite technically deep on something which is completely hypothetical, but
true. But that's kind of the point of the podcast.
Yeah,
you know, we take the cake of idea and we slice it 12-fold and we see what the jam of potential is, what it tastes like, who makes the jam. Nine to Five Mac wrote this week that Apple released the first beta. We say beta here. Beta like Peter, not beta as in
Mater.
Thank you. Version of iOS 13.4 for developers, and it contains evidence of a new feature that will make it possible to use the iPhone as a car key and more. The blog said that iOS 13.4 contains references to a car key API, which will make it possible for the phone and also the Apple Watch to unlock, lock, and even, this is a very interesting bit to me, start a car. A bit like Tesla. I think Tesla does this, doesn't it? According to the system's internal files, users will be able to use car key in NFC-compatible cars, as they only need to hold the device near the vehicle to use it as a key. It will not be necessary to authenticate with Face ID, similar to what happens with the Express Transit cards. We talked about this on the show a few weeks ago, where if you pop the phone down on on a bus or one of the contactless things in the underground, you don't have to authenticate first. So it'll be a little bit like this. It also means the feature can work with the iPhone or the Apple Watch, even if it's run out of battery, which, again,
that solves my first main problem that I was going to voice.
Can you wait 2 paragraphs before voicing this?
Oh, good Lord, fine.
Thank you. 9to5Mac also wrote that another interesting bit of information is that car key can be shared with other people, such as family members. For example, you, Andy.
Oh, me?
You, being my brother, you could share this with me. I do not have a driver's license. I won't advise you do it, but you could, and that's the key. Drivers can invite them through the Wallet app in iOS to have access to the key on their own Apple devices. And there are quite a few car makers on board with this idea in principle already. We know Hyundai announced last year that it's got a new digital key system that's going to let phones become the gatekeeper of car security. Tesla has offered this with the Model 3, I think, for a couple of years. Ford in the US, maybe elsewhere, has some as well. So it's an idea that has at least some precedent for being used and reused in cars. But Andy, if I think back to just a few seconds ago, you had an opinion. Would you like to voice it?
The opinion was that the big issue with things like this is that often it was the case previously that if your phone was out of battery, it no longer interfaces with whatever you're trying to unlock, which obviously that's a real problem. We've discussed before about hotel rooms using phones as locks or smart front door locks that use your phone as an unlock. What happens when you come home pissed at 4 o'clock in the morning, your phone hasn't been charged, so it's completely dead? Does that mean you can't get into your house? And often that the answer has been yes. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting that this technology, don't quite know how, but allows it to still talk to whatever you're trying to unlock, even if your phone is completely dead. I have no idea how that works. That's very interesting. I assume it sort of it bakes it into the firmware and the hardware somehow, so that it.
I mean, it's NFC and it works just the same way as your credit card NFC doesn't have any power source.
Sure. The thing I see this being particularly useful for is for the car sharing services. Things like Enterprise Car Club, Hertz do like hour by hour rental on vans, where at the moment you go along and you literally tap in, there's a keypad, physical keypad built onto the car, and you have to literally, you'll send a code and you type that code in and that locks and unlocks the car for you. Whereas this way, everything you do, you book through the app, you would have it sent, the key in inverted commas would be sent to your phone, and you would just hold that against the car and it would start. There's no keys involved, no codes involved, no hardware that could get in the way other than obviously your own phone. Mm. So that's where I see it having particular advantage.
Okay, that's interesting. There's a couple of questions in the chat room being raised about how this actually works in terms of whether it's an app or not. The technology is an API that's been discovered, so there's no UI service connected to this as far as we can tell. But if it's working in the same way as the NFC system works for payment on things like the Underground and on buses, then it's built into Wallet, the Wallet app. So it's not a separate key app. But by being an API, it strikes me that there's no reason a company like Ford or Tesla or Hyundai or Skoda or Volkswagen or whoever to say, well, when you buy a car, download this app, register, and then the app pulls on the API in order to be used as a sort of a digital key. I think the idea is that it's probably quite flexible. Mm. So that's that. Nick in the chat room also says, I'd love this for home. I've already got keyless entry to the car. So I think there are systems already where you can do that. I'm looking at you as if you know the answer.
For cars.
No.
Specifically for the home.
For the home.
For the home. I don't know enough about the smart locks, and a lot of the really good ones that are on sale are currently US only, I believe, and we can't get some of them over here. I know the ones you can get over here, I believe you have to get it
built into the door, and let me say the ones that I've seen, the actual locking mechanism in the door gets replaced by an engineer.
Yes.
Amazon has a system where you can actually get a new lock fitted to allow an Amazon delivery person to unlock your door on your behalf using an app. Mm. And to drop off a package inside your house. So that's done, but that's not done with NFC as such. That's just done using Wi-Fi and connected devices.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily need to be pressed against the device like this would.
I think it's just interesting with cars and how the phone is becoming so much more the brain of the car, more and more. Even things like when you use, which is pretty common now, Android Auto and Apple CarPlay, when you plug your phone into your car, cars that support that, it basically just mirrors your phone, and your phone becomes the brain of your infotainment system for your maps, for your music, for everything. And so I just see a time when, if you're also including now locking and starting your car, there's no need to put any of that technology inside the car as standard. Your phone just becomes the default. As soon as you get in, maybe the way you start your car is by putting your phone into some sort of dock or on a NFC pad, and then that's just what wakes your car up. It's your music is there, your contacts are there, it's got your maps for your daily commute journey already pulled up with live traffic information, and all of that is done from your phone.
There are so many security questions we could raise around this, but they're also hypothetical at this point without knowing how a system would be implemented, that I feel a little bit unfair in dismissing those, but I think there will be many about...
Such as gone.
Well, for example, what if somebody steals your phone? This doesn't use... again, this is all hypothetical right now, but if it doesn't use your facial... if your biosignature, let's say, then stealing your phone, you're effectively also letting somebody steal your car. Unlike when you're making a payment and you have to use Face ID, and this is all per the 9to5 Mac write-up.
Would your phone not have to at least be unlocked to allow this to happen, or is the idea?
Well, the idea is it doesn't even need to be switched on.
I mean, they'd have to know which car is yours, but that wouldn't be too difficult if someone was particularly keen to see someone, say, leaving their car at a restaurant and then walking past their table and swiping their phone.
Mm. If you have an opinion, do let us know. You can send us an email, hello@uktechshow.com. Hopefully we'll see a little bit of this later this year in a new version of iOS.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/uktech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
We had some feedback from last week's episode. We had a great question emailed in from one of our patrons, Charlotte, who I've just noticed has joined our live stream as well. So hello to you, Charlotte. She'd asked on behalf of a friend about ways people can combat tinnitus using technology, specifically with headphones. We had quite a bit of feedback. I picked out a couple here. We had one email come in from Paul Cruxton, who said, "Hi guys, I have tinnitus and I listen to a relaxation track that lasts about 30 minutes on his Sonos system to get me to sleep." So that is using speakers rather than in-ear headphones and a relaxation track. And I would imagine that's probably a reasonably effective way of dealing with this. We had an email from Stephen Law, who said he uses something called sleep phones, he included a link. I will send a link to the website. And it looks like a headband, like a little headband with speakers in it. So it's designed to be worn while you're in bed with your head against a pillow, so you don't have a lump, I think, in your ear. So that might be another thing worth looking at. That's sleepphones, phones.co.uk. I haven't seen these before. I can't vouch for any of these things. But Stephen certainly seems to be able to, and he uses this.
I, on that, regularly sleep with it's the OnePlus Bullets Wireless 2 in my ear, because they are very good at isolating sound and I can't hear anything in the room.
Oh.
And they are small enough to fit in without really noticing too much.
Well, the question, I mean, you weren't on last week, but the question we had was about a replacement for some Bose in-ear earphones that were used for someone with tinnitus to sleep in.
Oh.
You can sleep in these?
I most nights do sleep with.
What are
with
they called
these.
Again?
They're the OnePlus Bullets Wireless 2. They are an excellent pair. I also think the sound quality is awesome on them. The battery life is great. They recharge very quickly. And they are a neckband. Well, they're wireless, but with a wire connecting them. And which I much prefer to individual ones like the AirPods, because I have two different brands now and I've used those individual ones. I have lost an individual headphone. One, I think, was Jam Audio. I was walking down Old Street and one pinged out my ear, crossed the floor and went down a drain.
Okay, and just one more time, what they're
called? OnePlus, as in the phone brand, OnePlus Bullet Wireless 2. I use them daily, all the time with my main headphones, and sleep in them almost every night.
Well, do you know someone else who does things daily?
Is it Daily Thomas?
Daily Thomas. Yes, it is Daily Thomas with his Merit News Show. It is Tom Merritt with the Daily Tech News Show, and we're going to hear from him in just a few moments about what's been happening in the wider world of global tech this week.
This week on DTNS, we cover the coronavirus effect on factories, conferences, and shipping. Shipping may be the most likely way you'll notice if products take longer to get to you. We also cover the U.S. election fiasco in Iowa and why basic IT practices could have avoided it. We talk about how a film from 1896 got upscaled to 4K, whether publicly accessible data is the same as publicly available data. It's not. And Patrick Norton gives us the latest on picking a new laptop. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
There was Daily Thomas. Thank you very much. We also have an extra message that went out on the feed for patrons earlier this week, where I talked about some of the difficulties in being both a journalist and a human that really, really doesn't want to use WhatsApp. It's very problematic if you are a European person, because basically everyone in Europe uses WhatsApp above all other things. But it's particularly problematic as a journalist as well on top of that, because so many sources are, that sources as in sources of information, want to use WhatsApp. And so you can possibly move your friends to another platform, but it's very difficult to convince a source it's in their interest too. So that's all out now on the extra message feed. You can get that at patreon.com/UK Tech. And Andy and I are going to record another extra message for the next episode, which we're both under an embargo for, which is why we can't do it live, but something special that will be going out later on this week. So look out for that.
Before we finish,
yeah,
and I don't really need to say this on the podcast, but I am amazed that this tin of Vaseline, which you mentioned in the top of the show, Vaseline is basically a lubricant, and yet this tin is completely sealed shut. So I don't know how that happens. It's like it's a tin of glue.
How do you know it's Vaseline inside it?
Well, it says Vaseline on the outside, and you told me that you have a tin of Vaseline here, but that's completely sealed.
Hang on. This is one for the ASMR fans of the world. Hang on. There you go.
All right.
Do you want some?
No, I don't. But I don't know how a tin of lubricant can become so impossibly sealed.
If you're a fan of irony, do let us know your favourite ironic fact. Hello@uktechshow.com. Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure of yours to be here this week. Please tell everybody what you've been working on recently. Your YouTube video has been very interesting lately.
Thank you. Yes, I do a YouTube channel all about the photography that I do. You can find that at Andrew Langson Photography on YouTube. You could find me on Instagram with @BatteryHQ, also on Twitter with @BatteryHQ. Do go and follow my YouTube channel if you're at all interested in photography or some of the nonsense I get up to, because it's a very small channel. I'm trying to grow it. And subscribers does really help. And if you want to engage by liking, commenting, then that helps massively as well.
I have to say, I watched one of yours recently, the one about the ridiculously long exposure you did down on the
Canary Wharf.
Canary Wharf.
Yes.
How long was that? Like 8 minutes?
It was about 8.5 minute exposure for one image, which was a long time. But I think the result was pretty cool. And of course, now I've moved to Scotland. I'm currently building a photography studio, so I'm going to have lots of videos around that and some of the tech involved, and obviously lovely, beautiful shoots in and around Scotland.
Excellent. Well, that is Andrew Langson Photography on YouTube. Go and find that. We'll have some links in the show notes, of course, as well, uktechshow.com, and in the MP3 description here. I would recommend at least checking out the long exposure vid. It's a good sample. Thanks, everyone, listening live. We've got Charlotte, we've got Luke, Mike, we've got Nick, Richard, we've had others earlier. Andy, it's been fun. Thank you very much. We're going to go and record Extra Message, so look out for that later in the week. And for the time being, if you need Vaseline, just give me a shout.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.